And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Bob M.
Hi, I'm Bob Mueller. I'm an alcoholic. I want to congratulate Richard and those of you who are here for recognize yourself for the first 30 days. I'm glad you're here. Chris, where are you? You were just terrific. You want to come up here now and finish? I think you should. Really. Well, anyhow, I'm here to kind of move me up. I was supposed to be here in March. So I guess somebody went to the football game tonight or had something better to do. So I'm here a little earlier than expected. So I hope I can live up to Chris. Much of what Chris experienced, really, I didn't experience. And so I can tell you right now, I don't know what it's like to have handcuffs. I don't know what it's like to be in jail. And I'm kind of a lily white drunk. But anyhow, now, is there anyone here that was living in 1947? Raise your hand. Wow, that was a very good year. 1947 was a terrific year. That's the year I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I do it in increments. Those of you that have heard me before, this is nothing new. Anyhow, I'll do my best to do what I can do in 30 minutes or so. Yes, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous July the 7th of 1947. I was 31 years old, and I came to California on a geographical tour. I had the fortune of being working with a couple of young men for a number of years, and they inherited a large sum of money, and they decided that they wanted to become entrepreneurs. So they bought a retail store, and I was a meat cutter by trade. And I went into business with these guys, and we were doing quite well. And I went to a promotional meeting put on by Armour, Swift, and Hormel, and all the big packing companies. And I went to it, and 3 days later, I came back from Northfield, Minnesota, and I was in South St. Paul to start with. And I wound up in Northfield, Minnesota, which is about 120-some miles south of Minneapolis. And to this day, I can't tell you how the hell I got there. So that was blackout number one. So when I came back, these guys kind of took offense to that. They thought, you know, what kind of a partner is this? Well, I was operating on their money, so and I was indebted to them. So anyhow, I decided that the partnership ended. They gave me my adios, Bob, and I left. So I had to start. I'll go to California, and I'll start all over again. I'm going to get a new start. Now, I was drinking quite heavily, but it wasn't, you know, I was a young guy. I was having a lot of fun with it. You know, I was chasing the girls, and I was, you know, all the stuff you do when you're out there drinking. Just having one hell of a good time. And I really didn't think much of it. But you know what? I was that guy that when I drank, when the other guys went home, I never went home. I looked for the all-night spot. And that's where I wound up. And I never could understand that. I thought, why in the hell is it I do this? These guys have sense enough to go home, but I don't. I get out there, and so anyhow, this was kind of my pattern. So I come here to beautiful California. I have a brother who lived here, and I arrived here, and at that I got here on December the 4th of 1940. And when I got here, this city was just booming. The aircraft industry was just picking up, and it was booming. And if you had a trade, you didn't have any trouble getting a job. And within less than a week, I was working for Safeway stores. And the guys that I was living in a boarding house, boarding in a boarding room, said to me, have you ever been to Tijuana? No, I have never been to Tijuana. Never. So anyhow, they said, we're going to Tijuana tonight. Now, how about that? So we journeyed to Tijuana. And we went to there's something down there called the longest bar in the world. Well, I must have started on one end and went to the other end and started at that end and went to the other end. And I don't even remember coming across the border. All I remember is I woke up in my bed and I thought I must have had one hell of a good time. Well, that was the beginning of it. And I thought I had left my alcoholism in Minneapolis, but it followed me right to California. And I went to Tijuana several times, and each time it was the same. But this lovely girl that I was engaged to finally came to California on her way to San Francisco. She had given up on me because she thought I was a worthless bum. You know, I wouldn't go anywhere. You know, I lost this good opportunity and I'm out in California. But she came here to just kind of say goodbye, Bob. And while she was here, I convinced her that I'm the greatest guy in the world and you'll never find anyone any better. So we ought to get married. And by golly, you know, we did. On June the 1st of 1941, I married this beautiful Irish girl. And from then on, it was, you know, just great. And we had a marvelous time together. And we would have friends come in, and we'd play poker, and we would drink. We'd have a good time. And then Pearl Harbor happened, and I was about to be drafted. And I was from being drafted from some outfit in Minneapolis, transferred me here, and I had to go down to Logan Heights and register for the draft. Then I get this notice that I'm going to be called in the Army. So I joined the Navy. I'll fix him. So I became one of those sailor boys. I had that nice white hat, that nice blue uniform. And fortunately, because I was a meat cutter, after I got out of training, they assigned me to the Navy commissary store. And I was just like working for Safeway. All these lovely pregnant girls would come in and we'd sell them meat and shoot the breeze with them and tell them how beautiful they were. We hoped their husbands were safe. And we were cheering these beautiful, and we had babies born in the back room. It was an exciting place. Really was. Well, anyhow, I finally wound out in the South Pacific. And when I was discharged from the Navy, I came back, and my alcoholism manifested itself. I was having a hard time coming back into being a civilian again. And it was difficult for me. So I was hiding it all in booze. I'd get drunk, and this lovely lady would say to me, why do you drink like that? And I'd say, well, I really don't know. And I would drink, and then I'd go, and I'd be gone for one night, two nights, three nights. And she never knew where the hell I was, and I don't think I knew where the hell I was. You know, and it's pretty, and then we had three friends, and she used to be so scared and so frightened, she'd call these three guys, and they'd go out looking for me. Probably looking at me, you know, he's in the morgue, he's in the hospital, he's in jail. Where the hell is he? Well, it's pretty hard to find somebody when they're snuggled up to some cutie in some place. You know, they never thought about that, I guess. You know, you go to these bars and these women say, would you like to go home with me? Well, you can't turn that down. So, you know, you go home with them. Well, the kicker was, this is going on quite frequently. And I'm working for a company called Cuyamaca Meat out in El Cajon. And I was in the Navy with a guy that owned it. And he told me, Bob, you stick with me and you'll be a millionaire. And I thought, this is a pretty good proposition. You know, you don't get that offer very often. So anyhow, I'm working away, but I had the habit of going out at noon and drinking my lunch. And when I come back, they kind of frown on you working with power saws after you've been out drinking. So, you know, this guy that was the superintendent of the outfit, he came up to me one day and he said, Moeller? I said, yeah, what's up? He said, you don't work here anymore. I said, really? No, you don't work here anymore. Bud told you that if you ever came back smelling of booze again, you were through. And I was through. But you know what? That lovely lady that I married, we'd had one daughter while I was at the comm store. And lots of times, I wouldn't come home with the paycheck. I would leave, and I'd hit the beer joint, and I was off and running. And maybe I wouldn't show up again for 2 or 3 days, and I'd blow all the money. The bills weren't getting paid. Here's this lovely lady with a daughter who I think was three and a half. We were about to have our second child, and she used to, I had no car, she used to ride the bus into El Cajon and walk from the bus stop up to Cuyamaca Meat, which was about at least a mile or more. And she came there like that on Saturday nights to make sure that she got the paycheck, that I didn't get out of there. Well, that's the kind of guy I was when I drank. So that kind of gives you an idea that I belong here. I really belong here. Now, I want to tell you that, if you don't mind, can I work my cheat sheet? I'm not a youngster anymore. Have anyone figured out how old I am? Wonderful. I am. I will be 95 Thanksgiving Day. I'm an elder statesman. Okay, I got a cheat sheet here, so if you don't mind, I'm going to do this. What I'm gonna... Now, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll tell you how I got here. I ran a little meat market on El Cajon Boulevard, and I'll try to rattle this off as quickly as I can. And I'm deciding one day whether I should go to lunch or whether I should go to the gin mill, the Golden Pheasant, and have a drink. You leaving? What?
5 to 9.
5 to 9?
Yeah.
Woo. Sit down. That's all right. I know Gary. I'll tell you about Gary. I got to digress a little here, if you don't mind. I'm one of the founders of this meeting. Me and about 20 other people. You know, I do the phones every other Monday night. And I've been doing them for about 12 years with this guy called Terry. Now, we're sitting there one night, and we're talking about La Jolla speakers, Old Town speakers, and we talk about there's some other speaker meetings around, but Terry and I got kicking it around. We said, you know what? We really need a speaker meeting more centralized where you don't have to run off to La Jolla. And so we kicked it around for a while, and then it got down to the other meetings, and Terry talked about it, I talked about it. And finally, one night, we all met at Coco's down here. And before the night was over, we had all the positions filled. We passed the basket, and we had a seventh tradition of $400 that night. Now, how many of you are here that were there that night? Stand up. Only one, two, three. All right, give them a hand. That's how it started. And thank you for supporting it. It's been a very successful meeting. Where the heck was I? Oh, I gotta tell you something else. You see this lovely, beautiful lady sitting right here with the beautiful silver hair? You ever write a letter to God? Did you ever write a letter to God? Okay, my wife passed away in 1994. So I was out shopping for a long time. I tried this one for a while. Nah. Try that one for a while. Nah. Oh, she's not so bad. Nah. And it was going on like that. So finally, I'm at a retreat. And I said, I'll write a letter to God. And I did. I wrote a letter to God. Dear God, I would like to have a lady that I could love and adore for the rest of my life. I put it in a God box. And 6 months later, this lady called me up and she said, do you remember Joanne from her honeymoon cruise? And I said, yeah, I remember Joanne quite. She said, well, she's a widow again, has been for some time. You two ought to get together. So God answered my prayer. He gave me Joanne. And we've been together for 8 years. And we're not married. We don't live together. But we have one hell of a good time together. And she feeds me. Now this guy sitting right here is another good pal. 11 months ago, I had my driver's license suspended because I had a little neurological problem, and this damn neurologist cut me from driving. So I've been kind of on Shank's ponies here, and everybody's been good to me. I've had more people getting me around. And my friend Stan the man. He comes and he hauls me around, and he's also good with a computer, and he fixes my computer, and he's made me kind of computer smart, I think. Well, anyhow, where the hell am I? All right, here. Okay. Well, listen, when I came into AA, I'm waiting to get a seat, and I bump into this guy, and he taps me on the shoulder, and I turn around, and I look at this guy, and I said, oh, my God. He said, how are you, Bob? And I said, I'm fine. And, geez, I had a hell of a hangover. Oh, it was bad. I said, I'm fine. He said, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm running a meat market down here, Piggly Wiggly. And he said, well, I own a meat market up the street. Now, this guy and I, we tore Minneapolis apart, the gin mills, the dance halls. We ran together, and we had one hell of a roaring time. And I didn't even know that he was in California. And I said, Bob, how's it going? And he said to me, Bob, it's going great. I'm doing fine. And he said, you know what? I haven't had a drink in 2 years. Really? Yeah. He said, yeah. He said, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, when he said Alcoholics Anonymous, that rang a bell. And I'll tell you why it rang a bell. When I was in the Navy, I was on this destroyer, and I don't know where it came from, but there was a Reader's Digest, and it had an article in there about Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, that was probably 1944, probably, when I read that. Well, my lovely wife had had about all she wanted of me, and she called AA, and they told her, why are you laughing? They told her, well, we don't intervene, but we certainly like to help her. So we have two pamphlets, and we'll send them to you. So they did. They sent her the two pamphlets. I found them in on the John and one in my lunch box. Oh, really? And I read them. But when I read them, then I related back to that article I read in the Reader's Digest. And I thought, well, this is something, but I said, kind of hard to relate to this. I can't be that bad. And geez, I was worse, really. But anyhow, that was sort of my introduction to AA. I said, well, what do you do at this AA thing? And he said, well, I belong to La Mesa Men's. That's a group out in La Mesa, obviously. And he said, they meet on Friday night, and we have a book that we study, and it helps you get your life in order. And I said, really? And he said, really? He said, it's a marvelous book. And I said, well, Bob, it's good seeing you. I said, wait a minute now. You said La Mesa. Where do you mean in La Mesa? I said, I live in La Mesa. And he said, he told me. And I said, well, that's not too far from where I live. I'll see you later, Bob. That's Monday. And as I said, I was had one hell of a good hangover. I left that drugstore, left Bob. I went back to where I worked, and I went up to the guy that was the manager of the store, and I said, have you ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous? And he looked me right square in the eye, and he said, did you just hear about it? And I said, quite frankly, I did. He said, that's where you belong. How the hell did he know that? So anyhow, that was Monday. Didn't drink Monday. I went home Monday night. And I told my wife about this. And I could see in her eye that she was rather elated. And so what did I do? I got on the phone and I called this one guy. I told you there were three guys, the three musketeers that used to go out looking for me. I called the first guy and I said, I think that I might be going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, by God, you had better go, because I'm damn sick and tired of chasing after you. And so I called the next guy, and I said, I think I'm going to join Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, don't think about it, do it. I said, all right. Call the third guy. And I told him, I said, apparently I said I have a drinking problem because I've bumped in blah, 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 and I think I'm going to join Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, Bob, I've never told you this, but I have a brother who drank heavily. He's been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years. I'd like you to meet him. And for God's sakes, join Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, that, as I said, was August of 1947, which is a very good year. And I stayed sober for 13 years. I do this program in increments. I have 63 years in Alcoholics Anonymous minus 8 bad months. So I'm sober for 13 years. Chris, I was sober 13 years. I didn't have all the experiences you had. But anyhow, I've got involved with the unions, and I'm a union official, and I'm at a convention in Atlantic City, and I'm offered a position that was really a good position for me. And I had some problem with my wife about it. She wasn't too pleased with my move if I had accepted this position. It meant that we would probably be moving from San Diego to Seattle or possibly Hawaii. I was going to be a vice president for a certain area and assistant to a vice president. And so when I got to the convention, I had to decline the opportunity because we had to move, and my daughter was just going into high school. My son was just going into junior high school, and it meant uprooting the family, and it wasn't going over very good. And so I capitulated, and I told them, I'm sorry, I have to decline this position. Now, that was one hell of a resentment. I can tell you, I had a beauty. I thought, by God, here I am. I've got the opportunity of my life. It's right here. All I got to do is say yes, and I'm off and running. I'm going to be a big shot. I'm going to be another John L. Lewis. He was the head of the coal miners union. And that's who I'm going to be. I'm going to be a giant among giants. And it didn't happen. So a guy says to me, hey, Sinatra used to sing at this bar. And maybe if we go there, we'll get lucky. And maybe Sinatra will be there. Why not? Now, we're all gussied up, you know, with fine clothes, flashy cufflinks, diamonds. You got the old regular labor leader, man. I'm classy looking. And we go to this bar, and there's nice, you know, waitress girls running around with damn near nothing on, you know, about an eighth of a yard of material, and, you know, I kind of like that. And so anyhow, the bartender comes around, and he says to my friend Harold, what do you have, pal? He says, I'll have a bourbon and water. Now, Harold and I were going to La Mesa Men's for 5 years together. And I looked at Harold, and I said, Harold, for Christ's sake, it doesn't say anywhere in that book that you can be drinking. And he said, oh, I've been getting away with it. Doesn't bother me. That's all he had to say. You know, me with a big resentment. And I've been getting away with it. So the bartender comes around again, and he says, how you doing, pal? And I said, I'll do better with a little bit of bourbon in that Coke. He put the bourbon in that Coke, and in less than a half an hour, I was the same guy that I was 13 years previous. Buy him a drink. Give that guy a drink. The little girl comes around with the shorts. Give you shove a $5 bill up in her panties. And, you know, it's all the same. Right back where I was before. No different. And, Jesus. That lasted a week. I came back to La Mesa Men's, and my Bob was my sponsor. This guy I was telling you about, I called him up, and I told him, I said, holy crap. I said, this is what happened. He said, you're going to La Mesa Men's tonight, and you're going to tell them every damn thing that happened. Don't you leave out one damn bit of it. I said, okay. So I go to La Mesa Men's, and I make my amends to the group. And I do that, and it was difficult to do, but there was a little guy at that meeting, and maybe you've heard of him. His name is Jim Burwell. He is one of the first 100 guys that wrote this book, and he was a member of La Mesa Men's. So when I got all through, and I was getting ready to leave the meeting, Jim Burwell came up to me. He put his hand, he was shorter than myself, put his hands on my shoulders, and he looks me square in the eye, And he says, "You're a hell of an example for Alcoholics Anonymous." He was right. Well, okay. Now listen, I've had the good fortune of when AA was just 12 years old when I came here, and the central meeting was held at the downtown at the downtown. I'll think of it in a minute. No, the Chamber of Commerce building. In their auditorium. So my Bob picks me up and he says, "Tell your wife we're going down to the main meeting tonight." And I said, "Oh, great." And so that everybody gathered at this main meeting on Wednesday night. So we go to the main meeting and he said, "You're going to be surprised when you get there." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes." And so I thought, "What's the surprise?" And he said, "Well, I'm not in a position to tell you, but," he said, "you're going to be surprised when you get there." So we go to the meeting and the meeting starts, and you followed the usual normal procedure of a meeting. And so they said, "We have a guest tonight, and our guest speaker tonight is Bill Wilson." And this big, tall, lanky guy got up, and he spoke to the group, and he was... It was quite an event for me to meet the founder, one of the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, in my first year of sobriety. And when the meeting was over, he shook hands with all of us, he and Lois, and left. So Burwell lived here in up in Hillcrest, and he was a frequent, came to La Mesa Men's frequently. And he always knew. Now, Bill Wilson's mother lived in Coronado, and he came here quite frequently. And when he would come, there's a little fellow that's passed on. He had about 50 years of sobriety when he passed on, Chuck Courtney. Some of you may have known him or heard of him. Chuck Courtney at the time drove a yellow cab, and the first time when Bill came to San Diego, he happened to be his fare. And Chuck looked back at him and he said, "If I'm not mistaken, I think I know who you are." And Bill told him, "Really?" And he said, "Who do you think I am?" And he said, "I think you're Bill Wilson." And he says, "You're absolutely right. I need to go to Coronado." So every time Bill came to San Diego, he would always request Chuck Courtney. And so we kind of got tipped off when Bill was going to be in town. And when he would be here, he would go to the 6th and Penn. And once in a while, we'd have the occasion to go there when he was there. Well, I've been kind of stammering around. I'm about ready to wrap it up here, I think. Anyhow, I'll tell you the next thing. I want to tell you two things, three things, and then I'm going to knock it off. sounds like a knock off the drugs. Anyhow, this Bob called me one night and he said, "There are 20 of us that are going to meet tonight, a special meeting that's being called." And he said, "Really?" I said, "Where is he?" He said, "I'm not telling you." He said, "I know where it's at." And he said, "So tonight we're going there." So I said, "Okay." I said, Why is so secretive about this?" And he said, "I don't even know. All I know is there are 20 of us that have been selected to be at this meeting, and you're one of them, and let's let it go at that. Just go with me." And so we go to the Lutheran Church in La Jolla across from Scripps Hospital, and we go into this room, and we get in, and there are 20 chairs in a circle, and there's a gentleman sitting in a chair up in front of the circle, semicircle, and we go in and look at him, and I think, he looks somewhat familiar. And so when we all get seated, the fellow that manned the meeting said, "Gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming. You're a select group." And he said, "The reason you're here," he said, "is to meet with Dr. Bob, and I'd like to introduce to you Dr. Bob." And Dr. Bob was dying of cancer, and he was, being a man of science, a doctor, he was at Scripps Hospital to let them do some research. But he wanted a private meeting while he was here, and I was fortunate enough to be part of that. And when we left, he shook hands with each of us, and he said the same thing to all of us. Don't louse it up. So don't louse it up. Okay, a couple of things that I'm very, very proud of. I served on the San Diego County Department of Health Human Resources Committee. And Dr. Askew was the county doctor at the time. And I served on there with a woman named Bernice Morris. Bernice Morris was an attorney. She was the founder of Crossroads. Her sister was an alcoholic, and she was the founder of Crossroads. And we served on that committee together. And Bernice was also the local contact for the National Council on Alcoholism. So at the meeting one day, she said, I have something I'd like to bring up to the committee. And she said, I don't know, recently Long Beach built a detox center. And I feel that San Diego needs a detox center. And I have had some experience with alcoholism. And she said, I think that I would like to pursue that. And I'd like for this committee to pursue it. And Dr. Askew said, well, Long Beach. He said, well, I think that you should go to Long Beach and get all the information you can get for us and bring it down, and we'll present it to the Board of Supervisors. So she said, I'm willing to do that, but I'd like to have Bob go with me. And so Bernice and I went to Long Beach, and we interviewed the director of this beautiful detox center. He was kind enough to give us all of their building drafts, some of their operating material, and we brought it back, and we reviewed it with Dr. Askew, and Bernice and I made the presentation to the Board of Supervisors, and the Board of Supervisors approved the detox center. So 11 and 11 Island came out of that meeting with Bernice and myself. The next thing that I'm very had something to do with, and some of you have heard me say this before, but many of you haven't. I don't say this braggadociously. I just say it because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and people put their trust in me. And that's something I'm very proud of. So I'm serving on another committee, and this gentleman says to me, Bob, there is going to be a new hospital built, Veterans Hospital built here in San Diego. And there's Dr. Camp is coming here to build this new hospital. And he has built hospitals before. And his experience is that he needs someone, a labor liaison. And he says, I think you're the perfect person for that. He said, I would like to have you meet with him when he comes into town next time. So when he arrives in town the next time, I meet with Dr. Camp. And he asked me, you know, my background, the labor movement, blah, 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 and I tell him, and he said, it's important to me to have a labor liaison. And I said, well, I'd be willing to do that for you. But I said, on one condition. And he says, there is a condition. I said, yes. I said, I'll tell you my history or some of it. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have been for X number of years. And I know I was involved in getting the detox center started here in San Diego. And I said, I think that if you would have a treatment center for substance abuse, that would be my payback. And he shook my hand and he said, Bob, you have it. So 5 days before the hospital opened up, he called me and he said, I want you to bring whoever, four of your friends, from the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want you to come to the hospital. And I went to the hospital, and he took us up, I forget what floor it's on, third floor, west, I think. Second? Is it second? Thanks. I've forgotten. But I'm an old guy. I forget easy. So I go up, and he takes us to this facility, and I tell you, I'm just speechless. And now I can tell you, and perhaps some of you have been through there, and you know. And so Dr. Camp said to me, well, we've gone this far with it. Now we need a staff. And he said, since you've been in the fellowship as long as you have, he said, I would like you to sit in when we hire the director. And he said, whoever you pick, that's who it's going to be. I said, you got it. No, I'm not qualified to do that. And he says, in my opinion, you are. And we hired Dr. Mary Pendry. You ever hear of that name? She ran the hospital for a number of years. Well, anyhow, guys, I've kind of rattled on here. I don't know exactly what I said, but I sure enjoyed you. And I tell you, it's gratifying to look out and see all of you sober drunks. And those of you who are here, we used to call our wives dry mates. That's what we used to call. So she's a dry mate. How many dry mates are there here? Not a gal, one way back there. Well, welcome. Listen, thanks a lot for having me. I'm through. I love you.